Welcome back to the Hogbeat Hoops podcast. It's been a little bit of a layover. This is our first show of the new season, first show of the John Calipari era in Fayetteville. I am joined by my co-host Daniel Fair, Arkansas basketball analyst. I am Jackson Collier, JC Hoops, and looking forward to breaking down a bunch of basketball action for you here today. We got non-conference still going, but 11 games through so far. Reactions to the SEC, reactions to how Arkansas looks so far, looking at some depth conversations for the Razorback roster, what exactly this team could look like, and a bunch more. First things first, Daniel, give the microphone over to you for a bit. What are your initial impressions? We're 11 games in, new head coach, essentially a fully new roster. What are your early impressions?
Yeah, it's been a fun 11 games so far. Started off slow. Kind of feels like things are picking up now here in the last few games, but it's been a fun 11 games to watch. I mean, I'm interested to see kind of how it all shakes out. Obviously, injuries and depth played a problem or played an issue in the last first half of the non-conference slate, but it kind of looks like they're starting to gel together a lot more. And we'll see how that carries over into conference play, but good reason to be optimistic so far.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, they had four major games coming into this non-conference slate. You go to Miami, you had Baylor on a neutral floor, you had Illinois on a neutral floor, and then you had Michigan on a neutral floor. Hogs managed to go 2-2 in those games. Miami probably not as good as many people expected them to be, which is also hurting Arkansas on the metrics a little bit. What were your thoughts on those four matchups in particular?
The Baylor game was a little disappointed, mostly just in the fact that it was a huge neutral site non-conference matchup, and they kind of fell down early. Shooting was such an issue in that game, especially they started, I believe it was 0-for-9 from deep in that game. But you know, again, it was still a new team. We all kind of knew that Adu and John L. Davis kind of had some injury concerns over the offseason. So, there was a lot of reason to be more optimistic heading into the Illinois game. And then they go into the Illinois game and just, it was the same. I mean, the same things that plagued them in that Baylor game, caused problems in the Illinois game. Obviously, giving up 15 threes, six to Tomas Lavovicic was not ideal. And, I felt like the depth hurt them a lot in that game as well. And in Miami, it was a tale of two halves. They struggled in the first half, got down by double digits, and then flipped a switch in the second half and came back. And, that was a hard fought win. And you mentioned Miami's not a very good team, but against any team on the road, especially a Power Five opponent like that, to be able to come back like they did in the second half, I thought was really, really impressive. And then, the Michigan game was, I feel like we watched three different college basketball games inside that one game, right? Like Arkansas struggles in the beginning. It was struggle in the beginning offensively. Like they got off to a faster start, which was important. Then just defense just let up, and Michigan gets out to that 15-point run. Then towards the end of the first half and into the second half, Arkansas comes storming back. They come back, they're up by 18 points. And then you lose the lead. And then all of a sudden it's a tight game. So I felt like we watched a blowout on both ends, and then we were treated to a really exciting finish. So I thought that was the most complete game they played in the second half, at least. I felt like they were just kind of more of a well-oiled machine in that game than they were in the first two non-conference matchups there. But that's kind of what my impressions were. It was slow going, but it looks like it's getting better.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And even going back to the Baylor game, obviously the team wasn't 100%, but I felt like the fact that they hung in there and they showed some resiliency, showed some fight, and were able to hang within 5 points. And essentially, it was a hostile environment. I mean, there was a good amount of Razorback fans there, but it was in Texas. Baylor had just, I think they were coming off their blowout loss to Gonzaga to start the season. So, obviously Arkansas got kind of a raw deal there because you never want to play against a really good team and a really well-coached team coming off such a bad loss. But Arkansas got that draw, still hung in there. I think the biggest thing for me so far in the non-conference slate has been, you know, they haven't hurt themselves. A loss against Miami would have really hurt them. But they managed to dig themselves out of that hole, win the game. And, you know, I think Cal has mentioned it in multiple press conferences. They had to win that game, and they did that. You know, there, it's a really resilient team. Against Illinois, they dug a hole early, and the final 35 minutes of that game, I think Arkansas was minus one total. Mm-hmm. So it was really just a five-minute stretch to start the game, but they got down by a lot. They kept clawing back in. Never quite got over the hump in that game, but they did it against Miami. They did it against Michigan. So even though it is a young team and it's kind of a team that's put together from a lot of different parts, you have some guys who are familiar with each other. You have Aduthiro, you have Ivicic, you have DJ Wagner, who all obviously played together before, and you have one holdover from the Eric Musselman's tenure, and then everybody else is completely new, which is crazy. And you think about it, too, that chemistry is slowly developing. And I think one of the factors that's showing that it has developed and it's getting better and better is the assist rate of this team, the number of assists that they're generating per game. Boogie Flann and DJ Wagner both have been really effective in the dribble drive and scoring off the dribble drive, but also finding open teammates as well. That'll be crucial in conference play when you're playing against better defenses who are going to prevent those guys from getting their own buckets, which that's where they've kind of thrived so far this season.
Yeah, absolutely. I was, I don't have the exact number of what their assists were, but three games ago, they were sub 225 in the country in assists. And as of right now, they're at 97. So obviously, you know, a pretty big and impressive swing there. And yeah, like, I mean, it just kind of goes to the team gelling more, and they didn't get a lot of that run in the off season that would kind of help that chemistry, you know, develop for the first, you know, 11, 12 games of the season. I think a big part of that was Jonas Adu. You know, he missed, Cal said it was 5 months over the offseason, which when you think about when they actually got on campus, we're talking like, what, April, May? That means he missed pretty much the entire offseason. And so that not having that ability to gel, especially with the point guards coming off the pick and roll, I think he and Boogie Flann are really effective in that. And you know, not getting that chemistry, but it seems like it's kind of coming together now. And, you know, we'll see what happens when conference play starts. But, you know, it's been good. I have appreciated that they haven't really lost effort. You know, like you said, they're resilient. They're not losing their grit, and they're not losing the effort. And that's one thing I saw with John L. Davis. You know, he's struggling to shoot the ball, struggling to score, hasn't really been a huge factor. But if you watch him on the court, like, he's not like lollygagging around. You know, he's showing effort, he's showing fight, and he's showing hustle. And it's been good to see.
Yeah, 100%. And now Arkansas has two non-conference games left before taking on Tennessee to start conference play. They have North Carolina A&T and then Oakland coming up, I think, December 21st mm-hmm. and December 30th, I think are the dates. Don't have them pulled up in front of me right this second. But, you know, now that we're starting to see this roster get fully healthy, you know, we were talking about they weren't healthy against Baylor. They weren't healthy against Illinois. You know, fans have been thrilled with how Zvonimir Ivicic has played so far. For the most part, there's been issues on the defensive side of the ball, especially getting caught in pick and roll situations, but he played well enough to at least look the part of a starting center, even though everybody knew Jonas Adu was that guy. He just wasn't ready yet. Now we're kind of looking at this team as they're fully healthy, but is there a concern for depth, knowing that at any given time, if one person goes down, that's a major hit to what this team is trying to accomplish?
Yeah, in my opinion, obviously, yes, right? Like, depth plays a huge role in that. I mean, Calipari mentioned it himself after the Michigan game. He's like, I'm probably going to have to rework my my nine-man rotation idea, but I liked there are some issues with Big Z on the defensive end, but I liked that he got as much run as he did in the non-conference, because if a guy like Adu is gets into foul trouble, he's out for a game for whatever reason, like Big Z is serviceable. You're not going to be able to replace Jonas Adu in terms of replacing a 6'10", I think he's 265, I believe, all SEC level center, but you can manage without him in game plan, without him if you have to. So I mean, it plays a huge factor in the, in the grand scheme of things, but because they've dealt with those injuries so early on, I think it helps. That'll help them moving forward.
In theory, if you have a key rotation of nine, like a core rotation of nine, you're set. I mean, that's typically a really good basketball team won't have to go beyond their eighth or ninth man. And I see a lot of people on social media, on Twitter, everybody talking, oh, well, you know, Arkansas only has nine scholarship players, which it's kind of misleading. The 13 guys are all on scholarship. They are legitimate scholarship basketball players. So they have 13 scholarship guys. Kazmir Chavis, who is the 10th guy, was a three-star recruit out of high school, legitimate point guard. I think he was even rated in the Rivals 150. Could be wrong there, but I mean, he's a legitimate basketball prospect. Melo Sanchez was in the D2 ranks and shot 40% from three on high volume. So those are guys who were there, and you know, they have the potential to play some minutes. Now, I think on any team, if you're having to go to that 10th, 11th, 12th guy at any given moment, more often than not, you're going to be in trouble anyway. Mm-hmm. I mean, those aren't the type of guys that you typically want to or need to rely upon. So I think the concerns overall might be a little overblown. That just might have been an overreaction to the fact that they started the season so injured. I think John L. Davis's early struggles coming off his injury even exacerbated that a little bit. You had no Jonas Adu. You had John L. Davis not playing up to what he was expected to be. So you have your two major portal adds who weren't performing up to expectations or weren't performing at all in Adu's case. And so I think that made fans kind of question the whole nine-man thing. Mm-hmm. I think, yeah, moving forward, you want to build that roster out a little bit more. But at this point, I'm also kind of giving Cal a pass a bit, because he had to come in April, May. He had to build an entire roster. He had to schedule an entire non-conference schedule, and he had to build a coaching staff, among plenty of different other things. So right. I'll give him a pass on that. Long-winded way of saying I'm not necessarily worried about depth as long as they stay healthy. Mm-hmm. Injuries happen everywhere, but you know, it kind of is what it is.
Yeah, and I mean, looking back at the transfer portal season from last year, it's like you're not going to get a guy of even close to Adu's quality out of the transfer portal knowing he's going to be the backup. And so, I mean, yeah, like you said, even if you did go into the transfer portal, like, are you going to get a guy like Jonas Adu? You're not. It's just not going to happen. So, yeah, I'm kind of with you on that. And I had that same thought earlier. Just, you know, it's not so much the amount of injuries as much as it is who it was that was injured. Because, I mean, Davis and Adu were both expected to be like key contributors on this team, and missing them for so long, you know, it had some problems that arose.
Absolutely. Good grammar there. Yeah. Now, so now that we are starting to see them healthy, though, we're seeing a full roster, kind of what this team was built to do, what this team was built to look like. You said, you know, Michigan, they put together their best full game yet. I know the competition level, but UCA, they put together a really strong game there. They came out hot, which is the first time they started out really strong offensively this season. And they really never struggled at all in that game. They probably could have stretched it out a little bit more. Cal probably called the dogs off a little bit to respect the in-state opponent, whatever. But now that we're starting to see this, probably still not 100% completely, what do you think the ceiling for this team is as we move forward, you know, getting healthy, starting to gel a little bit more, getting guys like Boogie Fland going on all facets? I mean, he's kind of been going from the jump, scoring, yeah, shooting, defending, but adding in Jonell Davis, adding in Jonas Adu, and then getting all the production you're getting from Trevin Brazil on both sides of the floor. What do you think the ceiling is starting to look like for this team?
I believe it was you that said that the ceiling before the season started was Final Four. Am I accurate? You said that on our board.
I did say that. I said this. I was kind of broad with it. I said if everything happens exactly perfectly right with this team, they could go to the Final Four. I think I also said the floor was just missing the NCAA tournament or being a first round exit.
Yeah, that's fair. I don't know that I'm ready to call them a Final Four team. I do think that they're a team that can make an extended run in March, especially, you know, no more injuries, no more, all those things being, you know, equal. I do think it's a team that can make a deep March run, but the SEC is so stacked. And, you know, I think right now the entire conference as a whole is 152-21 as of today, as of this recording.
The SEC is literally the best conference in college basketball history right now. Like the metrics, yeah, are pointing it to being the best college basketball conference in the history of the sport, which is insanity.
Absolutely. And the fact that you're playing through that, like, I don't know. Like, I don't think that they're a top five team in the conference now. And that's not a knock to Arkansas. That's just, there are so many other incredible teams in the conference that I think your top three right now are probably Auburn, Tennessee, and they're going to hate me for saying it, but I think Kentucky. And then after that, it's just, you know, you could replace any team in the SEC with number four. So I'd say a team that is capable of making an extended run in March and, you know, probably good enough to hit fourth and might maybe challenge third in the SEC when it's all said and done.
Oh, press the wrong button there.
Just didn't want to be on anymore.
No, I'm bailing out of here. But no, I think I agree with that. I might be a little bit less optimistic than I was at the beginning of the year. I might say Elite Eight is the ceiling now, just knowing how good the conference is. But on the other hand, you know, you don't play conference teams early in the NCAA tournament. Mm-hmm. So if you make it, then it's all about, well, you've been battle tested because you played in the best conference in the sport. So, but I think I would still lean towards that Elite Eight kind of model. Is the ceiling. I think a reasonable expectation, I'll go this route. I think a reasonable expectation for Arkansas fans is winning at minimum 8 conference games. If you get to 8-10, you're golden. Anything above that is even icing on the cake. Not that fans should be like, oh, well, we did what we hoped to do. We went 8-10 in conference. It's not what I'm saying. I think that's a reasonable expectation for year one with how stacked the conference is and knowing that, you know, Arkansas has 9 guys that they're running around with. But I will say those 9 guys are very good. Boogie Fland has looked phenomenal. He's looked the part all along the way, which is a nice transition to some early season awards I wanted to potentially hand out. I'll give you the option of choosing who wins what awards.
Okay.
I will give you the name of the award and let's see who you come up with. All right.
Okay. Go for it.
So let's play, let's give somebody the hustle player award. Who you given, who gives all out effort, who hustles the most on both sides of the ball, doesn't necessarily impact in the box score. Who hustles the most on this team?
Ooh, that's a tough one. There is the heart of me really wants to go Billy Richmond, but he just hasn't played enough in the last few games for me to give it to him. And I feel like every time he's on the floor, it's max effort. He's so good on the offensive boards, and it's straight up fighting for him. Like, big fan of Billy Richmond's motor. I'm probably gonna have to go with the Duthiero on this one. Just especially when he came in, we didn't expect him to have the impact that he's had on the team, but all out. He played 21 minutes and he had the flu against Michigan. I feel like he's just that guy. He's has no problem just throwing his body into the lane, drawing a foul, getting to the free throw line. even if he's not a great free throw shooter, we'll throw that to the side. Feel like he's got that all out hustle, all out effort. I'm a big fan of Thero's game for the hustle award.
Well, I'll give it to Billy Richmond since you won't, because he is diving on the floor all the time. I mean, Thero does the same thing too, and I just feel like if we're giving away awards at this point in the season, Thero could just snag them all at this point. He's been such a difference maker and really has exceeded any and all expectations from, I think, what a lot of people had. And the expectations he had coming into this season were even pretty high. He was entering his third year under Coach Cal. Everybody was raving about his athleticism, his effort, his defense, and saying, oh, if he could only develop a perimeter jump shot, he could be a lottery draft pick. Well, early on, he was shooting a little bit better from the perimeter, just kind of falling off a little bit, still looking like a lottery draft pick because he's still scoring at will, still getting to the free throw line and driving like a madman. Yeah. So Adu Thero definitely deserves any and all mention, honor, credibility, but I'm still giving it to my guy, Billy Richmond, because I think he's done a great job so far of just being that ultimate hustle guy that I think every basketball team needs. He's come in and, you know, outside of the last, like you mentioned, he hadn't played a ton the last few games, but when he has been playing, he's found ways to score, even though he's not the best, you know, offensive threat. He's not the biggest offensive threat, not the best outside shooter, anything like that, but has found ways to score by, you know, hitting the offensive glass, diving on the floor for the ball, running in transition, doing all the little things right.
Yeah. Yeah. No, Billy Richmond's a great pick for that. Like I said, I would have given it to him if I didn't think that Thero deserved it just a little bit more than he did.
Most improved from last year. So this can go to any player that played in college last year.
Okay. I was going to say, because that de facto has to go to Trevin Brazil. I will just say Trevin Brazil, though. Like, and knowing how last year went for him, dealt with injury, missed several SEC games. Last year's coming off of that ACL injury, but he just didn't look like the same player that he is right now. And you know, part of that I think is Cal just unlocking that mental switch for him. But I think Trevin Brazil has been the most improved of the guys who played in college last year. I love his length. I love his athleticism, and it seems like the motor is finally like there, and like I kind of want to, like, the want to almost. It just seems to be like, he seems to have that attack dog mentality he talked about in the offseason, and we're seeing that kind of play out in real time. And so he gets the most improved award for me.
Yeah, and I think he has that motor on both sides of the ball too. I think he had it selectively on both ends of the floor last year, mainly on offense, and the year before that. But I think this year he is a full possession defender. He does not take any possessions off on the defensive side of the ball, which is massive for him because he's never been a really go-to defensive player outside of, you know, blocking some shots rotationally, like on help side. He is a really good one-on-one defender right now, which is what Arkansas needs. And it adds to the versatility of this team as a whole. Having him and Thero both be able to play the three and the four and defend the three and the four spot. And even both of them can even step up and defend a true five on the other, on the opposing team, depending on who that is. I mean, if it's a Hunter Dickinson, I might not stick Trevin Brazil on him, but for the most part, you know, in the modern game, Brazil and Thero both can guard 3 through 5. And I think a big part of Brazil being able to do that has been unlocking the motor, like you said, on the defensive end. I think that's a great pick for most improved, but I think I'm going to go with DJ Wagner for mine. He's shooting over 40% from the three-point line right now. He is hitting his layups at a high rate, which I think one of the criticisms from Kentucky fans and beat writers alike was he loved to get downhill, but he struggled at finishing through contact. He's done a lot better in that aspect this season. He's defending at a high level. I think he's one of those guys. He came into college rated as a 5-star, one of the most highly rated players. If he were to come out of high school, what would have been one of the most highly rated players ever to come to Arkansas. Didn't quite meet those expectations as a freshman, but was battling through a lot of injuries. And I think the fact that he's got healthy, and the fact that he's in his second year in the same system under Calipari and with largely the same coaching staff, I think, you know, the sky's the limit for him. And especially now that he's hitting so many shots on the perimeter, he's looking more and more like a legitimate draftable prospect again.
Wagner's a fantastic pick, especially, I mean, like you said, his injuries, you know, last year really hampered him, but he was never really known as a strong, like, three-point shooter. Not in a sniper level clip, but I feel like he's really improved that a lot. He has had two makes. This is like such a nitpicky thing. He has had two shots that he hit from deep that they called twos because he had his foot on the line. And I'm like, come on, man, just move your foot like 1 inch back. But yeah, Wagner's a fantastic pick. I really like the backcourt duo of Wagner and Fland. You got Wagner, who's, you know, a little more veteran. Fland is, you know, still that freshman. I feel like they complement each other really well. And, you know, like you said, he's hitting layups at a really good rate. And he's also, he's finding his teammates, you know, when he gets into the lane like that. I believe he had 6 assists against UCA. Like, you know, he's been really good at distributing the ball as well.
All right, last two awards, both probably pretty obvious, unless you swing a curveball at me. Who has exceeded the expectations the most?
I really want to say Thero because he has. I mean, he's leading scorer after averaging 7 points at Kentucky last year. I feel like Thero is the easy answer there.
Yeah.
I would go with Thero.
I was expecting you to say Thero there.
Yeah.
Freshman of the year.
Boogie Fland. Come on. Boogie Fland has, I don't think this is a hot take, and obviously we haven't even started conference play yet, but I feel like he has the chance to be the best point guard to roll through Fayetteville, like in Arkansas history.
Wow. That's a bold take.
That's a bold take.
You're saying even recently, you know, you had Anthony Black just a couple years ago. And then you had Kareem Reed, you had Lee Mayberry.
That's fair. That might be too bold of a take, but I feel like the ceiling is there for him.
Ceiling is definitely there. I would 100% agree with that.
Yeah.
Arkansas has just had a lot of really good point guards come through the program.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. That might be a little too hot of a take. I might need to cool that off a little bit. But
although, you know, we can see how this season shakes out, and I can try to figure out where I could place Boogie Fland in the top 100 Razorbacks list of all time.
Do we have to have that come back again?
Hey, I need to do an updated edition because I didn't have Anthony Black or from that year forward. I don't have any of those guys on there.
Yeah. Where would you put Anthony Black off the cuff?
Oh, that's tough because it's hard to do one and dones, which it's kind of a new thing because Moses Moody was Arkansas's first one and done. And I think I had Moses Moody at like 18. His stats were good, but not like overly impressive as much so as some of the guys that he was along the lines with, like as far as ranking all-time players. But the fact that he was a true freshman and led Arkansas back to the Elite Eight for the first time in 26 years, that he was the program's first one-and-done prospect, that he was, I think he was SEC Freshman of the Year that year too. I believe so, maybe. I could be wrong. But all those type of things kind of pushed him to that level. I think I would have Anthony Black, even though his stats were probably better and he impacted the game a little bit more. As far as individual statistics wise, I think I might have him a little bit behind Moody, maybe top 25 ish, but it gets really dicey in the top 25 because there are so many good players at that point. Yeah. I remember people getting very angry at me because I didn't have Joe Johnson top 10. I think I had him top 15. That made people very angry,
but that's fair. We don't have to keep talking about it because I remember that. But Moses Moody was SEC Freshman of the Year, and he was SEC Newcomer of the Year and first team all SEC. Felt like Moses Moody was like quietly, like, I mean, obviously he was the first one and done, but I felt like his outbursts were so quiet. Like you weren't thinking about Moses Moody dropping 20 points a night or whatever, 20 points on any given night. Like, but like when he had 28 against LSU, like,
right,
nobody remembers that. You know, it was all respect to Moody. It's like, I just felt like he was more of the quiet leader of the team in that year. So,
All right, so we've done team awards. We got two games left in the non-conference before conference play starts. Touched on it a little bit, but looking ahead to the absolute gauntlet that is SEC play, what are your thoughts as far as, I guess, what do you expect out of Arkansas? Maybe not a win-loss total, but what do you expect in terms of should they or are they going to start slow because they start out against Tennessee? Is that going to dig them in a hole? Do you think their resiliency that we talked about earlier is going to have them fine no matter how tough the schedule starts out? Will the depth be a concern? What are your just overall thoughts on conference play?
I don't love that we start with the number one team in the country on the road at Thompson Bowling Arena, which is not a place that they are typically great at. I do like that they start the first five games. You've got three on the road, two at home. But the two at home are Ole Miss and Florida, both of whom are ranked. Both fantastic teams. I watched Florida absolutely dismantle my Wichita State Shockers a couple weeks ago. Like, Florida looks like the real deal. I wouldn't be surprised to see them start at like 2-2 or like 1-3. And that's only because, I mean, like I said, like the first three, yeah, Tennessee, Ole Miss, Florida, and like all three of those teams are ranked. Tennessee is playing absolutely insane basketball right now. It starts out pretty tough. It gets tough. It's still tough. It's tough the whole way around. But you get a little bit of reprieve. You got LSU, Missouri, and then Georgia, who are good. I would put them probably about at the same or slightly below the level of Arkansas's potential. But I mean, I think that resiliency, obviously you'll see it in a game by game basis, but I think it'll be more prevalent throughout the rest of conference play because, you know, you could lose two games in a row and, you know, still come back and, you know, rattle off another three straight. You know, it'll be a tough schedule. Ken Pom's got them at 8-10 as the predicted, their predicted record, which they're spot on right now. They predicted Arkansas to be 9-2 at this point with those two losses to Baylor and to Illinois. So that's probably about where I would say, you know, that 8-10 level. And I think that puts you solidly in the NCAA tournament. Absolutely.
Yeah, I'd agree with all that. You know, looking at the schedule, not to just like write off Tennessee as a loss, but it, more likely than not, they will not win that game. So if you start conference play 0-1, I think the best case scenario for Arkansas would be splitting Mississippi and Florida at home and then winning both or all three of LSU, Missouri, and Georgia. So if you do that, that puts you at 4-2 to start out conference play. Not a bad start.
It's a pretty good start, especially considering where they've been as far as starting in conference play in the last 3 years.
Which was abysmal. I think, 1-5 and 0-3.
I think it was 1-3 every single year of the last 3 years. Yeah. I could be wrong on that. Don't fact check me.
No, it was something like that. It was bad.
Yeah. So, yeah, absolutely. Start 4-2, and then right after that, you've got Georgia, Oklahoma at home, and then you have the road trip to Lexington, which is going to be fun. That's just going to be a fun environment. And then you're at Kentucky, at Texas, who's playing at a really high level, as are they all. And then you get Alabama, LSU at home. So, I mean, after that initial six game stretch, like the next six, I think you could split those six, go 3-3. And that puts you at 7-5 at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And then you finish off on the road at A&M, which were they at the top of your ugly basketball index rankings?
Not quite. They were top 15. They were number 15 of the high majors in the ugly basketball index.
Yeah. So I mean, you got at A&M, then you go at Auburn, which is going to be a jungle. That was a pun. That was a lame pun. And then you know you've got Missouri, Texas, South Carolina, Vanderbilt, and Mississippi State. All of those teams I feel like are winnable games for Arkansas. We'll have to see how they look at that point in the season. But if you're playing at a high enough level, I think you could see you know, 4 or 5 straight wins to end conference play as a ceiling at that point. And then you get into the SEC tournament and then the NCAA tournament. And so it's a lot of highs and lows, right? Like there's stretches that are just brutal. There are stretches that are winnable games. And so I think that's where we'll see the resiliency kind of the most is not so much on just a game by game basis, but over the course of the entire conference slate.
All right. So wrapping things up here, before we go, I just have to ask you, if you had to pick one game for Arkansas in conference play that you think they will win that they most likely won't. So like most unlikely win. What is your most unlikely win for Arkansas in conference play?
It's Kentucky. It's Kentucky. It's not so much that I think Kentucky is an unbeatable team. They're not. Like if you can slow them down from the 3-point line, like Kentucky is beatable. But going into an environment like Rupp Arena after the vitriol that both fan bases have had towards each other, the fact you're going into the hostile territory right there. I don't know. I don't think that's a game Arkansas will win personally, but if I had to pick a game that I don't think they'll win that they do, that would be the one.
I'm in the exact same boat with you there. I really truly don't think Arkansas ends up winning that game, but it's such a big game. Emotions are going to be super high. Both teams, both fan bases. And I do think Kentucky's obviously a good basketball team. They've won some good games already. I do think they have benefited more from other teams underperforming than them performing at a super high level. I won't sit here and say that Kentucky has a very elite defense. I don't think it is. But yet, you know, Gonzaga and Duke both struggled to score late and both struggled to shoot from beyond the arc against Kentucky. Wide open looks. Little bit of luck there. Happens. Luck is part of basketball. You also look at the fact that Arkansas is benefiting from luck from teams not hitting threes against them, but also they're defending the three pretty decently in stretches too. Something's got to give there. If Arkansas goes into Rupp and Kentucky isn't hitting threes, big if there, because they're going to feed off the energy of the crowd. They hit one or two, the crowd's going to get behind it. We've seen it happen already multiple times this season. But on the off chance, if Kentucky has an off shooting night in Rupp, I think Arkansas wins that game. But again, big if. But
yeah, I feel like the at Kentucky and at Auburn games are very similar in that sense. But I think that there will be more crowd environment influence in that Kentucky game for sure.
No, absolutely. So. All right, Daniel, any closing words, any closing thoughts before we wrap it up here?
Nothing huge. It's been a fun 11 games to watch, and it'll be interesting to see how it shakes out. Obviously, they play North Carolina A&T on Saturday at 1:30. The game's on the SEC network, so you know, tune in for that and check out the coverage over at hogbeat.com afterwards.
And be sure to tune in regularly. We will be recording this podcast weekly, as we have in the past. We are back doing it again. Been a little bit of an adjustment period, a little bit of a busy period. Transfer portal's going on with football, and Daniel's been worked to the bone. So glad to have him back. Glad to have him talking hoops. As he said, go to hogbeat.com, hawgbeat.com. For all basketball, football, baseball content relating to the Arkansas Razorbacks. Also, you see in the little ticker at the bottom of the screen, follow both of us on social media. Daniel's been putting out a ton of good content in article form and stats and everything in between in basketball and football. So be sure to give him a follow. I'm Jackson Collier. You can see me at JC Hoops on Twitter. That's Daniel Fair. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you again next week.